It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. How much do you know or think you know about your personal finances? In a world where savings and investment options are increasingly complex, study after study shows that millions of Americans lack financial literacy. Paul Bram, chairman and CEO of BPU Investment Firm and a member of the board of directors of the Pittsburgh chapter of the Financial Planning Association, says financial illiteracy is causing a social crisis in retirement, which in turn influences unemployment. He joins us to talk about the scope of this problem and how it connects to a current push for increased regulation of the financial planning industry. Paul Bram, welcome back to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks for having me, Paul.
You can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email is essspgh@wesa.fm, and you can reach us on Twitter at essspgh, hashtag EPLive. Do you lack financial literacy? What concerns do you have about how it's impacting your life? 412-246-2002, the number to call to join our conversation. Paul Bram, you were recently in Washington, D.C., representing the Financial Planners Association, advocating for increased regulation of the financial planning industry. Now, you usually hear about American industries wanting less regulation and oversight from the government. So what is the FPA hoping for from Congress, and why is it so important to have tighter regulation?
Great question, Paul. Let's focus first on that notion of industry wanting less regulation. I think there's a role in politics and business today for the right kind of proper regulation that really both protects Americans and creates, the vastest exposure to good services that Americans can have. And so the FPA, in its focus, looked at three areas, what we call the Uniform Fiduciary Standard. I'll comment on that in a moment. Greater regulation and oversight of registered investment advisors, and the creation of a regulatory standard for those who call themselves financial planners. So I'm going to work backwards on those for a second.
Okay.
Anybody can call themselves a financial planner with a small F and a small P today. And so what you might have are those without appropriate education, without appropriate credentials, without appropriate ongoing education, hanging on a shingle and calling themselves a financial planner. If you join that with the notion of the lack of financial literacy in America, you create the opportunity for the unscrupulous to prey on the unknowledgeable, right? And that
makes sense.
That breeds a lot of problems. Imagine what the world looks like if I hung my shingle out and said, I offer medical services.
Well, what qualifications does a person need in order to do that? Up to now, what has the standard been?
Yeah, so there hasn't been a standard. The Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards and Practices, a little over 25 years old, believes that standard should be the Certified Financial Planner designation, and the FPA advocates that because there is comprehensive education in the six areas of financial planning, as well as an ongoing requirement for continuing education, coupled with a clean regulatory record and a commitment to high ethical standards and a fiduciary standard.
That's a certified financial planner,
CFP designation.
So someone who does not have this certification, they can still hang a shingle. I'm assuming they can't say they're certified, does it then become a problem on the part of the person who seeks their advice for not being discerning enough to look at whether that person is certified or not?
Well, certainly there's an issue of personal responsibility in engaging the right kind of due diligence in selecting an advisor. And you would want to look at what criteria really makes sense for hiring an advisor. And if you go to the Financial Planning Association's website, you can find a series of questions that you should ask your advisor so that you can be more informed in selecting one. But I do think there is that opportunity for people to hold themselves out as one thing and behave in a different way.
So what you're saying is that it should be like a lawyer. There are no practicing lawyers or nobody. It's pretty obvious if someone hasn't passed the bar exam.
Right.
So what you're saying, it should be the same way when it comes to financial planners.
And that's correct. In fact, there's a legal prohibition for the unauthorized practice of law. If you're not a lawyer and if you're not a practicing lawyer, right, you can't give legal advice. And even in the brokerage industry, we put disclaimers on all the things that we say not to be constituted as legal or tax advice. And so we think lawyer, CPA, MD, those all have certain education, testing, ongoing education, and ethical requirements to practice in those professions. We think it should be the same thing for financial planning. What's more important to you besides your money, your family, your health, your
sure.
money, right? And
absolutely.
it's not regulated in that sense.
Do we know why that is? Why hasn't it been regulated?
So it's interesting. I was in Washington, D.C. as part of the FPA's Advocacy Day. 65 of us from around the country visited Washington, D.C. and met with Congress people and with senators and their staff, and we talked about this issue. The one thing that was really striking to me was how every office we visited talked about the amount of activity sponsored by the brokerage industry and fighting against a fiduciary standard and these standards. I want to read to you something from Bloomberg just
sure.
yesterday that happened on the Hill, so to speak. This was an interview with Oklahoma's Representative Lankford. And the Bloomberg reporter writes, he wants to protect constituents from what he calls a harmful potential SEC rule that would impose a fiduciary duty for retail investment advice, a move that would force brokers to legally act in the best interests of the clients. And apparently, Representative Lankford thinks that's harmful to people.
And why would he have that attitude? Is he trying to protect all of those who want to operate without the proper certification?
Well,
I mean, I guess it's hard to assume what's in a man's mind,
I don't know.
But it sounds as though a lobbying effort may.
But I would suggest that we disagree with his statement.
Yes.
I can't speak for him, but I can certainly disagree with his statement. He went on further in the interview to say that. That investment advisors wouldn't work with middle America and that brokers reach lower on the wealth ladder. And again, that's a statement that I would vigorously disagree with. He goes on to say when he was a newlywed, he worked with a broker not operating under a fiduciary standard, and that's what introduced him to investments. And my only question is, why not work with a broker who had your best interest, a legally mandated best interest, not somebody who simply had to operate under a suitability standard? It's not something that I understand. And when I ask people, would you rather work with a salesperson or someone who is legally mandated to act in your best interest? And they all respond the same. I want somebody working in my best interest.
There is an investment advisor regulation bill in the House. It was authored by Representative Maxine Waters of California. It's called the Investment Advisor Examination Improvement Act, and this bill might be up for a vote soon. What can you tell us about where things stand at this point?
So there are 22 co-sponsors on that bill now, which to me is really very exciting. And I want to give you some background on why that bill is so important and why it was so important to the FPA, the Financial Planning Association. Currently today, Paul, 60% of registered investment advisors have never had one regulatory exam. Now, if you understand the qualifications to be a federally registered investment advisor, that means that you have to have $100 million or more in assets under your discretionary advice as an advisor or as a firm. 60% of those firms in this country have never had a regulatory exam. Only 40% of the firms have actually been examined, and they're being reviewed on a cycle of about once every 11 years. So Nobody's watching. The highest fiduciary standard, and our government isn't watching. This is why we're advocating for some degree of regulation. What we want to see is that if you're going to hold yourself out as a financial planner, you should be qualified. If you're going to engage in that practice, you should be regulated. And that's not happening right now. So Maxine Waters' bill called for a user fee against those investment advisory firms, and that money would be used to pay for regulatory exams. Because the roadblock at this junk seems to be money. The SEC that has regulatory oversight claims it doesn't have enough money to meet its review, its audit, its exam obligations. And Congress won't release money to them either. So Maxine Waters believes that this is important enough to say, okay, if our government can't come up with the money and if the SEC doesn't have the money, let's assess the users and we'll find the money to hire examiners to go in and make sure that people are truly acting in the best interests of the clients that they serve.
What about the Senate bill that they'd like to see drafted?
So there's a Senate bill that and this is really interesting, and there's been a big change in the Senate bill. The Senate bill wants to appoint some outside third party. Many in the investment advisory industry have interpreted this as FINRA, the self-regulatory body of the brokerage industry. Some have interpreted it as being perhaps just outside auditing firms that would engage in this form of audit practice, and the investment advisors would simply pay for that audit, and it would be submitted to the SEC for review. Senator Baucus from Alabama has since changed his position on this. And thinks that, you know, we need to move ahead a little bit faster and get this standard in place. And he's a pretty powerful guy.
Yeah.
and he was the chair of the Finance Committee.
Right.
So this I can say, at least we finally have a dialogue that's focused on finding a standard that best serves our citizens.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. My guest is Paul Bram, Chairman and CEO of BPU Investment Firm and a member of the Board of Directors of the Pittsburgh Chapter of the Financial Planning Association. 412-246-2002 is the number to call to join the conversation. What is the state of financial literacy in America? Kind of as we look beyond the regulations you're pursuing and the responsibility that people perhaps need to have for themselves, are people knowledgeable enough about the ins and outs of the financial world when it comes to making investments? Are they doing enough on their own to learn about how certain rules impact them and the consequences of certain decisions they may make on their financial future?
Sure. This has been something that's been of interest to me for about 20 years now. Back in 1993, 1994, I read a survey that had been published by the Wharton School. And it was a survey of about 1,000 people across various demographic groups, income-wise, age-wise, gender-wise, profession-wise. And they asked a series of questions about financial wellness. And the one question that really jumped out at me, remember I'm talking 1993, 1994, was that 49% of those people earning $75,000 a year or more had to take off time from work to handle a financial crisis. And so $75,000 a year or more in 1994 was a pretty decent chunk of change. Those were the best and brightest of corporations and organizations that employed people.
And that's – we're talking 20 years ago.
20 years ago. And so today, if we fast forward today, we see that about 65% of employees report through various surveys that they lack financial wellness. They have deep concerns about their retirement. They have trouble paying their bills, even though it may be a two-income household. They have fears and concerns about their retirement assets. They don't know how to invest them. I think the proof of that is the amount of money that's actually in 401k plans, the average balance is only $75,000, $80,000 for a 55-year-old person or older. Guggenheim just came out with a report last week that said that less than 10% of Americans will ever have $1 million in their 401ks. And we see people working longer. At the same time, 95% of people report not liking their jobs. So I'm guessing
they're doing it because they feel they have to. How much of this goes back, goes to or has to do with the lack or the phasing out of the old time pension and the emergence of the 401k? Because that's really been that wasn't really the standard retirement plan until what, maybe 20, 25 years ago?
That's correct, yeah.
So, and that's risky. I mean, it's not guaranteed in the way that a pension is. It's based on investments, and some pensions are done the same way. But the 401k seems to be more of a gamble. Is that a good way of characterizing it?
I think for people who don't have an understanding of capital markets and who don't have an understanding of portfolio construction and investment selection, I think you're absolutely correct.
The onus is more on the person.
Well, it is certainly right, on the person.
Right.
And again, this goes to that notion of fiduciary standard. And so the Department of Labor now has a competing standard. So we think it's important for people to learn how to do those things. And interestingly, people have expressed in other surveys that they would prefer to learn it at work from a person or organization that's been vetted by their company, right? That doesn't have an interest in that plan. Mm. They want that sense of independence, right? And so corporations have a vested interest in doing that because they've learned that financial wellness clearly affects productivity. Those who don't feel good about their financial future cost their company about $15,000 a year in lost productivity. If you have 100 employees, 65 of them are costing you $15,000 a year in lost productivity just around money issues.
It adds up.
It adds up a lot. It is incumbent on employers to take up this mantle of improving financial literacy for their employees. It inures to their bottom line.
Do you feel it's reached the crisis stage?
I certainly believe it has. We see baby boomers that want to retire that are now taking the dream job at Walmart as a greeter. They're taking the power tool job at Home Depot because they can't afford to retire on the assets they've accumulated. Look at the amount of people coming in behind, 19,000 people every day turning 65, I think, is the statistic. It's extraordinary. And then we've got the generation underneath that has a different thought process about work. The generation underneath thinks that they work to live, not live to work, and they're not nearly as concerned about things in the future as they are quality of life today. So it just compounds and gets worse.
And they may have a harder time finding a job because people are hanging on to their jobs longer because they can't afford to retire.
It is one of the contributing factors to our high unemployment rate today. People working longer, not opening up those positions for the younger generation.
We have just a couple of minutes left. Will changing Social Security laws and disclosures help lessen the strain here?
So Social Security was designed to be a supplement to your personal savings for retirement. And today, Social Security only amounts to somewhere, depending upon your total income, 18 to maybe 30% of your total
income. If you're planning to retire on that, you're in trouble.
You're in trouble.
Really live meagerly. Yeah. All right, so how should financial illiteracy be addressed? What do we need to do?
Well, the National Endowment for Financial Education says the best way to address financial literacy is for corporations to sponsor education programs by qualified instructors and to teach financial literacy in the workplace. And that should be followed by counseling sessions that are paid for by the corporation. You have to reach this working generation first. Step two, it needs to be taught in high school. Remember, we used to learn shop and home ec.
Or, how to type or take shorthand
if you
wanted to be a reporter.
But did exactly.
I did that.
But did anybody teach you the difference between a stock, a mutual fund, life insurance, how to save for – did anybody teach you that?
No, and somebody really should have probably.
And they should have. That's
all of
right.
Us.
So all of us, exactly. And so it begins at that high school level and through college. And I think it also helps to remove fear of access to financial professionals by establishing that first point that I talked about, which is that uniform fiduciary standard. People need to be comfortable that their advisor is held to a best interest standard so they don't always have to second guess that advice.
And with about 30 seconds left, how do we change the pattern so our kids aren't confronted with these major crises?
So that begins with your education at home, right? Allowance should be tied to certain things. We should teach them about spending. The Financial Planning Association actually, or the CFP Board, actually has courses to teach kids how to handle money. And so there's a lot written. Get your financial advisor involved in your family finances. Work with a CFP professional. They'll work with the kids, with you, with the grandparents, that whole line.
Paul Bram is chairman and CEO of BPU Investment Firm and a member of the board of directors of the Pittsburgh chapter of the Financial Planning Association. Paul, pleasure having you here. Thanks again, as always.
Thank you so much, Paul.
And thank you for listening to today's edition of Essential Pittsburgh. If you missed any portion of the show, you can revisit past segments at our website, wesa.fm. Until tomorrow, I'm Paul Guggenheimer. So long for now.